His lisping, gentle, light baritone voice, with its slow presentation, would be heard either above the cabinet or from high up in any part of the room. Occasionally, Christopher used the trumpet. Sometimes he could be heard conversing with Alec in the cabinet. The guide always came with advice, never indulging in trivial remarks. Christopher was a very important cog in the materialization machinery of the Alec Harris Circle. There were many such cogs, some big, some small, but all of them important, having their own specialized work to do. One by one, these cogs, in the shape of friendly guides, began to operate smoothly in our circle. As each appeared, he politely introduced himself, explaining the reason for his presence and methodically applying himself to developing Alec's mediumship. Each step was guided into its proper channel at the appropriate time. Never was anything hurried. Naturally, with the advent of each new, 64, and trusted guide, confidence in our band of helpers grew. When, one evening, a calm, gentle voice announced, "I am Rowan," we were very happy to welcome yet another spirit friend. I asked him what he had been during earthly life. "What I was," came the gentle reply, "is of no account. It is what I am and the work I come to do that matters. This is my greatest concern. I come to assist you to give the world the truth about life after death. My work is to help mankind to a better understanding of what is known as death. I shall always be close to the medium, to help and protect him, and to guide his efforts, and yours, along the path ordained." Rowan promised to be present at every circle. It was always he who came first to greet and advise sitters. In deference to Alec's aversion to sitting in a cabinet, he was allowed to sit to one side of it, a little away from the rest of us. Christopher told us to place the trumpet outside the cabinet. We did exactly as told, firmly believing that voices would occur. We were to be disappointed. For several weeks, the cone declined even to move, let alone produce the faintest whisper. While we debated what to do, suddenly a change of instructions was received. We were told to place the trumpet inside the cabinet at the next Tuesday circle. Unfortunately, I forgot and set it outside as before. No sooner had we commenced when the trumpet rose in the air and entered the cabinet of its own accord. Later I received this reprimand from White Wing, "Faithful, you ask for voice. You must carry out all our instructions if you want success." 65. It was clear the guides never forgot what had occurred between us at previous sittings. They liked to be obeyed. I was meticulous over procedures pertaining to the circle. I became a veritable sergeant major. About this time a voice medium visited Cardiff. I was anxious to revive Alec's waning interest in this type of mediumship and believed I could achieve it by letting him have first-hand experience. I took a night off from the theatre. Murdoch, Betty, Alec and I attended one of the voice sittings that were arranged. The procedure seemed no different from ours, except that as well as the trumpet, there were various toys, bugles and tambourines, marked with luminous paint. Obviously, these were to be moved, jangled, or blown by spirit entities during the circle. Not having witnessed such a séance before, we were all intensely interested. However, it was not as spectacular as we hoped. Hardly any direct voices spoke, only those through the medium's lips. Quite a lot of minor physical phenomena were in evidence. The medium could not have been responsible for these. He was securely tied up by Murdoch and several others before the séance. The medium's guide said he wanted to speak to the lady by the window. Since I was the only female so positioned, it was amusing that many women acknowledged his call. "No," said the guide, "I repeat, I want the lady by the window," I responded. He intimated I was the person he required. "Lady," he said, "you have in your home someone with far greater power than the medium I am using today." I thought, he must mean Alec. But can I trust him? As, 66, if in answer to my doubting question, the guide continued, "With me is a great chief, a North American Indian. He gives you this message. He is looking to you to see that the work begun is carried out. He asks, will you promise, faithful, to do this?" Amazed that White Wing should be present at this circle, I gave my ready assurance. We were impressed at the manner in which he identified himself. by using the name he had given me, Faithful, there could be no doubt in our minds it was he. Also returning through a medium other than Alec, it was further proof, if we needed any, of the reality of his existence. This medium was unknown to us, and we to him. There followed a demonstration of physical phenomena. Bells rang, tambourines rattled, objects floated in the air, and we were touched by unseen hands. For me it was a wonderful experience. I hoped the same for Alec, but he was quite unimpressed by all this nonsense. He insisted nothing happened that could not quite easily occur without spirit intervention. Alec, I gasped, shocked at his disbelief. How can you say that? What about the message from White Wing? How could the medium know he always calls me, Faithful? What have you to say about that? Alec could not explain this part, but insisted the phenomena could be duplicated by physical means. Betty and Murdoch entered the fray, protesting at Alec's attitude. The argument became quite heated, but Alec would not relent. All right, he snapped. You tie me up and I'll show you I can do all that. It won't be spirit communicators moving things about either. 67. Without any warning, Alec was spontaneously entranced. Our oriental guide, Chang, addressed me. Little lady, he said. Do as the medium says. At your next circle, tie him up. He will have big surprise. You all have big surprise, big shock. Chang seemed amused, then continued seriously. Do not be angry with Alec. He pick up other people's thoughts and speak them as his own. Not his fault. This is not what he thinks. He paused, as if considering something, then added, tie him up. See what happens. As if by the snap of a switch, Alec came out of trance. Conscious. He continued heatedly with the argument which had raged prior to Chang's announcement. He was totally unaware there had been a break in the conversation, knowing nothing of Chang's remarks. I'll show you, he said. Just give me a chance. He looked defiantly at the three of us. All right, I said smugly, next Sunday, instead of our usual circle, we will tie you up good and proper. You can show us how it's done. He stopped short at that, looking, I thought, a trifle alarmed. Alec endeavored to laugh it off with a shrug. I think he hoped we would all forget about it. But we had no intention of doing so. Early on Sunday, we prepared the seance room for Alec's demonstration. We placed a curtain across a corner of the room to serve as a cabinet. As it was Christmas, we decorated the walls and ceiling with streamers, tinsel, balloons and the like. We found some toys, drums, bugles, tambourines, etc., and placed these, together with my baby son's reins, which were heavily hung with bells, on a table inside the impromptu cabinet. 68. We used anything that could be moved or make a noise. The chair for Alec was placed outside the cabinet. When evening came, we went into the seance room, followed by a somewhat downcast Alec. Much of his bravado had evaporated since his heated assertion that given the chance he could produce spirit phenomena by physical means. Here was his chance. We intended to hold him to his word. After all, hadn't Chang said we should? Glumly Alec took his place in the chair set aside for him. Murdoch tied him securely with yards of stout rope. Perhaps he was a little too enthusiastic about this. Alec called out in alarm, Murdoch. Not so tight, man. The rope's biting into me. It's the way I tied the other medium, said Murdoch the faking one. We all laughed at Alec's discomfort, feeling absolutely certain he would not be able to move his hands, let alone anything inside the cabinet. Sitting in red light, we opened the circle with a prayer and prepared ourselves for a long wait. This proved unnecessary. Almost immediately, and to our utter astonishment, the bells were shaken vigorously in the cabinet. Their tinkling was loud and clear. Quickly, we glanced at Alec to see if he had achieved the impossible and freed himself from Murder's ropes. But no. He sat, still securely bound hand and foot, looking decidedly scared. Alec realized this was no physical manifestation engineered by one of us. We were all linked hand to hand. Murdoch looked at me. I nodded. He got up and extinguished the light, and things really began to happen. 69. Something, a strange object, was dropped into Murder's lap. The piping Chinese voice of the little spirit boy Toy Toy could be heard angrily denouncing the medium, "Alec, him plenty bad man. Give him back that thing he bring with him, we not need it." Being dark, we were unable to see what it was that had so angered the little fellow. We had to wait until the circle's end before we could inspect it. What a wonderful seance that proved to be. The balloons were supernormally removed from the ceiling and burst with loud bangs. This delighted the spirit children, who had great fun. In their enthusiasm, they pulled down all the decorations. Tambourines were played with gusto. Little hands excitedly wound up toy cars, popped guns, played mouth organs and beat drums. It was all so unexpected. We could hardly credit that all this physical phenomena had occurred in our circle. There were 12 sitters, and dear, doubting Alec. We then recalled Chang's words about letting Alec try for physical mediumship. He said we would all have a big surprise. Surprise? What an understatement. We were astounded. During the circle, Iwanga spoke to us in his gentle baritone voice, expressing gratitude to Alec for making it possible for them to manifest in this way. What an achievement it had been for those on both sides of the cabinet. Iwanga added that this was the first of many such circles. In the future, even greater happenings could be expected. Before leaving, he urged us not to be angry with Alec. Angry? How could any of us feel anger towards him? We were thrilled with what had occurred. It was now obvious that Alec had very special mediumistic qualities. 70. At last I began to understand the earlier repetitive prophecies regarding the great work that lay ahead for both of us. I regretted the irritation I had always felt when told about this. As soon as the light went on, we hastened to inspect the object Toy Toy had so disdainfully cast into Murder's lap. At first, we were puzzled to discover it was an expanding rule, the type generally used by artisans. Then, understanding dawned. Alec had apparently slipped the rule into his pocket with the intention of retrieving it during the seance. By extending it, he hoped to simulate spirit activities by touching us or moving objects, however inexpertly. This, felt Alec, would prove undoubtedly his point about fake manifestations and gullible sitters. The guides had other intentions. By taking a strong hand, they showed that Alec was a very powerful physical medium, not that this in any way pleased him. He would rather have left the whole business in abeyance, or preferably given it up altogether. But Alec realized that having got this far in his development, he was committed to continue with the work spirit assigned to him. Thereafter, frequently on Sundays, we held special circles. Amazing things happened. For instance, a sitter would be tied to Alec by a strong cord which was secured by a variety of complicated knots, police knots, naval knots, and those improvised by various circle members, which would be difficult to untie at the best of times, let alone in the dark. Sometimes we were told to tie cotton between Alec's thumbs, making hand movements impossible without severing the thread. This, we were advised, would convince us that the medium had played no part in the following, 71, phenomena. Having been securely tethered, Alec would go into trance. Within a moment, Alec's pullover, worn under his jacket, would be spirit removed, leaving intact knots in the cord, and the thread between his thumbs. This was a physical impossibility. Strangely, whenever it was my turn to be tied to Alec, I experienced a sudden drop in bodily temperature at the precise moment the pullover was taken from his body. An odd coldness enveloped me as the garment was dematerialized. This indicated to me that a large amount of power was necessary for this. Another demonstration was designed to give us an insight into spirit perception. All circle members would place a personal article on a table inside the cabinet. This was done prior to the sitting, before Alec came into the room. Then, at the end of the seance, each article was found to have been returned to its rightful owner. Never once was there a mistake. It was a means of proving to us there was a supernormal intelligence at work. Of course, there will always be doubting Thomases. On one occasion, a Mr. K. in Cardiff remarked, "The medium always sits in his own house. He uses a special chair." What type of chair this was he did not enlarge upon. One of our sitters heard this remark. feeling that it denigrated Alex's mediumship, relegating it to fraud. He hotly retorted that wherever Alex sat, whatever chair he sat in, made no difference. Remarkable phenomena always took place. But could he do these in my home? Challenged the skeptic. I will only believe if the same manifestations happen at my place. 72. Alec was obliged to give a seance at the doubter's home. On the appointed day, Mr. K. invited a group of his friends to form a circle. To ensure that we had nothing to do with preparing the seance room, we asked if he would do all the preliminary arrangements. The skeptic readily agreed. Earlier in the day, we left with him a small suitcase containing the black curtains for the cabinet, rope for tying up Alec, and various toys painted with phosphorescent paint. At the agreed time, we arrived to find everything in order, everybody ready to start. We each put a personal article on the table in the cabinet before Alec came into the room. Before entering trance, he was securely tied up by Mr. K. and his friends. We had nothing to do with this. Of course, the same phenomenon happened as before. Each member received his, or her, own article before the circle's end. A piano stood to one side of the room. Mr. K. seated himself in front of this. Still endeavoring to test the extent of spirit capabilities, he asked, "Will someone knock on the piano?" Immediately, there came a loud thumping sound on the wooden instrument. Not content with this, Mr. K. pressed for further proof that spirit beings were present. "I meant play the piano," he demanded. Immediately, unseen fingers ran up and down the keys. "That's quite amazing," he exclaimed excitedly. "The piano is locked." The spirit people were in a musical frame of mind. They switched their attention to tuning forks. We heard one being struck. It gave off a humming tone in the key of A. Then another was struck. It produced a lower tone. The second fork belonged to a cellist, one of the sitters. 73. Both had been placed in the cabinet before the circle began. Quite extraordinary was that later in the seance, each fork was returned to its correct owner, though they were identical to the eye. Mr. K. left the seance firmly convinced of the authenticity of the phenomena he witnessed. "I felt our work was not to provide entertainment for casual sitters, nor to be at pains to convince disbelievers who were so blind they would not see. However, the guides were tolerant of difficult and incredulous ones. I realized they were building up the power, testing and experimenting, trying to assess the degree of development achieved. We now had an addition to our group of workers, two delightful spirit children, Sunny and Kitty. They became close associates of our small son, Bradley. He came to regard them as part of the family. If he was in difficulty at any time, or lost something, he would ask their assistance. They never failed to come to his aid." Cardiff Spargrove Spiritualist Church was fortunate at this time to receive a visit from famous, much-loved medium Helen Hughes. "I immediately arranged a sitting with her," Helen's Red Indian guide said. "He knew we were sitting for spirit voices. You will," he added, "also have full form materialization before very long." This seemed hard to believe. When Helen came out of trance, she heard clairaudiently about Alec's mediumship producing materialized forms. She smiled and added, "If my guide has said this, it will come to pass. Materialization is to be Alec's forte. There is great work for you both. One of these days, I shall be asking you and your husband for a sitting." 10 years later, her 74 prophecy was confirmed. Helen sat in one of our materialization circles. At about this time, my niece, Phyllis, came to live with us. She asked to join our Tuesday development circle. We were delighted to have her. It was fortunate Phyllis came to us when she did, since, quite unexpectedly, we suffered a setback in our circle. Betty and Murdoch had to leave Cardiff. Had it not been for Phyllis joining the circle, we would not have been able to proceed with the voice sittings. Phyllis and I decided to continue with just the two of us, giving what power we could to the entranced Alec. We held the circles in our own home now. That anything would come seemed a forlorn hope. But one night, as we sang, the trumpet left the cabinet. To our amazement, my father spoke. He called my name through the trumpet. It was only a whisper, but it was my father's voice, Of that I was absolutely certain. I remembered his promise to be the first to greet me from the other side, but I had hardly dared hope to hear his voice again. On another night, I sang the Indian love call. When I reached the closing words of the verse, "You belong to me," a deep, baritone voice from the cabinet completed the song, singing beautifully, "I belong to you." Later I learned my beloved White Wing was responsible. There was no doubt now that the spirit communicators could speak and sing quite independently of Alec. Though it was many months before they conversed with us at any length, when they did so their voices were strong, recognizable and quite distinguishable from Alec's. It took 2 years dedicated, diligent sitting to achieve this. During the winter months it was bitterly cold. As we 75 held our circles in the bedroom, Phyllis and I sat up in bed with the eiderdown over us. Poor Alec languished entranced in a corner of the room behind a curtain hung to form a cabinet. He always insisted on being tied up. Alec feared he might be accused of manipulating the trumpet. This was ridiculous. Often as many as 3 trumpets operated at the same time. There were also a luminous plaque and a cross which we always placed on the floor before starting the circle. These floated round the room, gently touching the sitter the communicators wished to address. One night, feeling sorry for Alec, we decided not to bind him in the usual manner. We left him sitting relaxed and comfortable in his chair behind the curtain. No sooner had we started than the 2 spirit children, Sunny and Toy Toy, said they wanted to tie Alec up. They took the case containing the ropes, etc., from under the wardrobe, and set about the job with determination. We heard the rope going back and forth as the binding up took place. We had a real party that night. We were sprayed with perfume. Pictures were removed from the walls and placed on the bed. All my clothes were taken out of the wardrobe and gleefully laid on the bed by the children. They were simply full of pranks. Then there was silence. I strained my ears to hear what was going on and sensed, rather than heard, a heavy object being moved. Absorbed by my concentration, I was startled when a loud knocking occurred near my bed. It was made by a drawer handle in a tall chest which stood far across the room. This was a heavy piece of furniture impossible for one person to lift, yet here it was standing next to my bed, quite 10 feet from its original position. What was even more extraordinary was this: I had left a 76 full glass of water balancing precariously on the edge of the chest. The glass was in the same position when we put on the lights. Not one drop of the liquid had been spilled. We drew aside the curtain to inspect Alec. Poor man. He sat there trussed like a turkey. The spirit children had put all the knots at his back where he could not possibly reach them. Sunny and Toy said afterwards they did this to show how he should really be tied up. It took 20 minutes to release Alec. White Wing now advised us that the time had come for him to keep his promise of sharing the voices with our other sitters. We should, he said, sit for these on Sundays and make another day for healing. So, on Thursdays we had the healing circle, and Sundays the physical one. This arrangement was satisfactory. Both the healing and the voices developed rapidly. We witnessed some remarkable spirit manifestations. Despite being told of the wonderful things that happened through his mediumship, Alec remained difficult. He was not at all anxious to continue seances. We talked it over and decided to discontinue the physical sittings, and concentrate on his healing. This was something he really enjoyed doing. Life put a strain on Alec at this time. He had great responsibilities at work, being in charge of a large number of men, and put in a 12-hour day. The only time we had together was on a Sunday. Much of that was taken up by the circle. White Twing, aware of Alec's feelings and anxious to restore his interest, asked me to place a pad and pencil near my bed. When an opportunity arose he would control, 77, Alec. I was to write down what he said and show it to him. Some nights later there were 3 loud knocks on the bed's headboard. I knew it was White Wing. He tapped out that Connie, Alec's sister, wanted to speak. Immediately afterwards, tapping came from underneath the spring mattress. Connie said by taps that we must not give up the circle. So much depended on keeping Alec to his mediumship. I replied that nothing I said seemed to do any good. Then I suddenly remembered the pad and pencil on a chair at the foot of the bed. "If only you could write on that pad, Con," I said. "I'm sure that would convince Alec." She said she would try. Alec slipped from sleep into the trance state. He had one arm under my body. I took hold of his other hand to link up with him for power. Presently the pencil was picked up and tapped on the chair. Then it could be heard scraping on the paper as it wrote. There came the sound of the sheet being torn from the pad. I sensed a presence floating, it seemed, towards the bed. I felt breathless with excitement. At this point Alec awoke. I joyfully exclaimed, "Alec, Con has been here." I put on the light. To my surprise, the piece of paper was lying on Alec's chest. I grabbed it, and read, "Be good, Al. Con." I was overjoyed, but my pleasure was soon dampened as Alec demanded, "How do I know that you didn't write it?" A loud rapping came from the bedside lamp. I said, "It's your sister. She's here. Now do you believe? Speak to her. Ask her yourself." 78. I quickly put out the light, knowing it would be easier for Connie to rap in the dark. Sure enough, the knocks were louder. I saw the dim outline of Connie's figure standing by the bed. "Look," I whispered. "Alec, she's there. Can you see her?" Obviously moved by renewed contact with his dead, dearly loved sister, Alec gazed intently at the faint form. Then he said hoarsely, "If it is you, Con, touch me." Another intolerable silence followed while I waited. Then Alec let out a joyful gasp, "It is Con. She has her hands on my head." I could have cried out in relief. My gratitude to Connie knew no bounds. After that wonderful experience, which convinced him that his dear sister was alive and near him, Alec was only too happy to sit again. The work went on. One weekend, Mary Hewitt, my medium friend who had gone to live in London, came on a visit with her husband. She was still anxious to convince him about spiritualism and managed to persuade him to attend one of our physical circles. Alec came home, the sitters soon arrived, the last being Alec Hewitt. He hung his big overcoat on the hall stand and entered the room. We locked the door and placed a table against it to reassure Alec Hewitt that nobody could enter. As soon as the light was extinguished, something was dropped into Mr. Hewitt's lap. While the seance was in progress, he received a strong punch on the head with one of Bradley's boxing gloves. Earlier Mary had joked, "I hope my husband gets a good biff on the nose. He is so stubborn." 79. When the lights were put on, Mr. Hewitt found his keys in his lap. He was puzzled because he had left them in his overcoat pocket in the hall. Yet, there they were, transported through the locked and barricaded door. 80. Chapter 6. A spirit face appears. On Christmas night 1939, Phyllis and I suggested to Alec we should have a circle, thinking it would be nice to exchange greetings with our many spirit world friends. To our surprise, Alec readily agreed. He usually had to be coaxed to give any extra circles. Being an unwilling convert to spiritualism, he was never very keen on spending long periods entranced. Before he could change his mind, we hastily hung a curtain across the corner of the room to form a cabinet. Alec was placed inside. At his request, we tied his hands and feet. In our haste, we did not darken the windows completely. Being a moonlit night, the soft beams filtered into the room. We were able to see much better than usual. No sooner had Alec collapsed into trance than Iwanga said, "We are going to try an experiment tonight. Please tie string around each of the knots in the cord binding the medium. Make them extra secure. We ask you to do this so that the medium, when he wakes, will have no doubts that what has taken place was the work of spirit friends and no one else. It will be a feat that no human could perform." Then, with a note of amusement in his voice, he added, "Also, have your long coat ready, Louis 1. Please secure the knots." 81. Puzzled, we set to work on the cord, making a very good job of it. This done, Phyllis and I took our places and began to sing carols. After a moment, Joachim joined in with his beautiful deep, musical tones. The spirit children present added their voices in beautiful harmony, then two voices sang together. The moon later became very bright. By its light the trumpets were clearly visible in their entirety, not just by the luminous areas painted round their edges. The curtains forming the cabinet did not quite reach the ground. I saw beneath them a white, semi-transparent substance billowing along the floor.